broadcasting worldwide on the Golf Club Network. It's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And you are in the clubhouse. Welcome to the last Saturday in March. Congratulations to Brittany Phan, Casey Masuda, Uta McLean, Lisa Lee, Bev Kim, and all the women who played. For the first time since 1985, the 2014 Army Women's Invitational at Lelehua. Coming up after we thank our sponsors, Ted Bishop, 38th President of the PGA of America.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Acura of Honolulu. Now more than ever, choosing an Acura just makes sense. With this much traffic, you should ride in comfort. Introducing the Acura RLX and RLX Advance. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones Jr. conspired to create a stunning venue for golfers of all abilities. A unique and unforgettable golf experience. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Jam. And Star Protection. Get your property threat and risk assessment, then protection for your home or business, for your concert or special event, like the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
Golfers, we've got a flash flood watch out. It's going to be mostly cloudy with windward and mauka showers, certainly, but also the possibility of thunderstorms on the leeward side as well. Those thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, locally heavy rainfall as possible, and the winds are variable to 15 miles per hour at flash flood watch until 6 o'clock Sunday evening. Now, the 38th president of the PGA of America, Mr. Bishop, is also the general manager and PGA director of golf at Legends Golf Club in Franklin, Indiana, a complex 45 holes, and he is the man who oversaw its construction back in 1991. The PGA of America is the organization most of your golf course professionals are members of. So if you see PGA at the end of a name, that means that person is a member of the PGA of America, has gone through the learning and testing process the PGA of America has in place to certify its teaching professionals, both men and women. It was founded in 1916 and is the largest working sports organization in the world, with more than 27,000 dedicated men and women promoting the game of golf to everyone, everywhere. And welcome to the show, Ted Bishop.
Well, thanks, Danielle. I'm happy to join you.
It's great. And what we're talking about in the game of golf is growing the game. The 27,000 men and women are your foot soldiers, I would imagine, and I see them at every event we have in Hawaii, where whether it's a small charity organization putting on an event to raise money for charity, or if it's the Lotte or the Sony Open in Hawaii or the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, there's always someone from the Aloha Section PGA out teaching and promoting the game of golf. Is that your mission, Mr. Bishop?
Yeah, it's definitely our primary mission is to grow and teach the game, and it's what PGA professionals have been doing since our association was founded in 1916, and certainly it's challenging right now given the golf environment that we're in, but you know, I think the PGA of America is well aware of that, as are our members, and you know, it's always a work in progress and a constant evolution in terms of introducing new and innovative programs to hopefully attract the public.
Absolutely. Now, you've launched a task force to accelerate the growth of the game through non-traditional means. It's a pretty broad-based group of people who are on that task force.
Well, it is, Danielle, and I think that, you know, coming out of the PGA show, we felt like that maybe now more than ever, there was, I would almost call it a movement afoot, where a lot of people in the golf industry were saying, you know what, we've reached a point in time where we need to take a whole different approach. And I think that the three things that I've charged this task force with that I will chair, first of all, are redefining the golf experience. And we need to create a product for the consumer that only has 30 to 90 minutes of recreational time budgeted in their day for golf. And, you know, right now we really don't have a product like that, short of a 9 or an 18-hole round, and that's mostly what people view golf to be. We don't have anything to offer the consumer. So that's one thing that the task force is going to look at. The second thing is going to be trying to explore how we can introduce new people to the game through through what I would call alternative methods of playing the sport. And I would use this concept of foot golf as a great example, where you combine the two sports of soccer and golf. You actually go to a golf course with a soccer ball. You play to a 21-inch hole. Golf course sets its course up with pars, threes, fours, and fives that correspond with shorter distances than you obviously would hit a golf ball on. But it's a way to introduce people who have an interest in soccer to the golf course environment. And, you know, I'm excited about that. And then I think the third thing is trying to take, you know, another look at the rules of golf and maybe create what I would call an alternative set of guidelines that would be far more relaxed than the rules that would allow the recreational players, who really, Danielle, consist of probably 90% of the people that play the game, that don't have handicaps, that don't play in competitive events at the local level, and give them some ways that they can have more fun playing and probably speed up their game.
I want to share something with you that's done at Poipu Bay Golf Course. And I'm not just saying this because they're one of my sponsors and they're wonderful people, where the Grand Slam of Golf was hosted for years, right? They have a three-hole practice play. So for $25, you can go to Poipu Bay Golf Course and you can practice on the practice range with their balls. You get a golf cart, and then you can play the first three holes at Poipu Bay, which happen to be a 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And it, for $25, that's about 30, 45, 50, you know, it's about an hour of after work. You loosen up, and it's scheduled in after 4 p.m. To me, it's something that I think we should promote to other courses. I think it's a really great idea. But I'd like to circle back to what you talked about with the USGA comes to mind. PGA of America thinking about relaxing or changing rules for the recreational player, something I'm a big fan of, because when I go out with the girls who don't know all the rules, you know, we play as best as possible, but more importantly, we play to have fun.
That's, right.
Right? I mean, you know, we're not looking at the USGA rules book, unless we're in competition, of course. But, you know, I think that's how you do it. Yeah, don't worry about it. Let's just move along. Let's just play. We don't want to hold up the group behind us. All of those factors come into play when you're playing with people who are just starting. But bifurcation's a really ugly word, and the USGA has been very much against it. And I understand the PGA of America is going to take some, you're going to be a stronger voice at the table of rules?
Well, that's the hope coming out of the anchoring debate that we had last year, is that we have a more predominant seat at the rules table, and you know, future situations like that that would come up. But I think that, you know, the fact of the matter is, Danielle, and you, those people that you just described that you play golf with, I mean, you know, number one, they don't really care about the rules. They don't understand the rules. And anything that we can do as PGA professionals to give them a set of guidelines that might be a bridge between the rules of golf and the type of game that they're playing now, I think is a good thing. And I think ultimately the goal with the type of things that I'm talking about would be to take people like you just mentioned, who I would classify as golfers, people that don't have handicaps, people that aren't going to play competitively, and then you got this other group of people out here that I would call players. Players are people that have handicaps. Players are people that play in competitive events. Players don't necessarily have to be good players, but they're people that enjoy playing competitively. And I think our goal, and nobody should misunderstand this, we're not trying to be rebellious, we're not trying to be disrespectful of the USGA rules of golf, but our goal would be to take as many people as we can who are in the category of golfers and get them ultimately someday to become players. But I think the other thing we're saying is, if you get into the game and all you ever want to do is be a golfer and just have fun and enjoy the people you play with and not worry so much about your score or handicap, that's okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
You just made my day. I'm sorry, you'd make my day if you said the Grand Slam might come back to Hawaii. That would be awesome. Is there a chance of that happening?
You know, I don't know what's going to happen. We were under contract for one more year to go to Bermuda, and that's been a great destination. I will have to tell you, I think one of the great disappointments that I've had as a PGA officer is that the first year that I became an officer was the last year, or the first year they didn't go to Hawaii. And I've never been to Hawaii in my entire life, and so I always, kind of the back of my mind thought, if this happens, I'll have a chance to go to Hawaii and attend the Grand Slam. But unfortunately, that never happened.
Well, we sure, you know, I was just thinking, and it's always been, this is where kind of in between many, many years ago, the idea was to make Hawaii and Honolulu kind of the financial capital between East and West. And Mr. Honda started the, he has a golf course here, he built it, and he created the Pearl Open, and it brought the East and West players from the West Coast, the Hawaii players, and the Asian players to an event in Hawaii. So there's this bridge sense, and with the growth of the game in Asia, in China, in Thailand, it seems like it'd be a great place to have an event sanctioned, if you will, by the PGA of America, since I just see that. Could there possibly be a PGA International?
You know, I mean, those are all great ideas, and I think it's interesting you talk about a PGA International. You know, we've talked about this concept of an international PGA championship, and, you know, I've never thought about it until you mentioned it, but Hawaii might be a nice compromise. It's a different time zone. It's obviously, from a climate standpoint, you know, it would fit a good location maybe in the early spring of the year if we ever move the timing of the PGA championship. You know, and I would say in all likelihood, if we ever do a PGA championship on an international basis, although Hawaii is certainly not international, it would be in an Olympic year. And, you know, there's a lot of things that make sense with that. So I'm going to be sure and pass that on. That'll be a decision that somebody will make long after I'm gone, but I think it's a hell of an idea.
Oh, great. I'm so glad. It just makes a lot of sense. What about, I know there's talk about possibly taking the PGA championship outside of the U.S. every 10 years or so, and holding qualifiers outside the U.S. for the PGA Championship that's held in the United States, of course. Where are we on that?
Well, let me correct you, first of all. We wouldn't hold qualifiers for the PGA Championship. We don't hold qualifiers for the PGA Championship. It's the only all-professional field in major golf, and a lot of the field makeup is based on the world golf rankings and you know, just the criteria that we have for our championship, and certainly a big part of that's the 20 club professionals that play every year. But we certainly are considering the possibility, it'd be sometime deep into the next decade, if it ever happened, of taking the PGA championship somewhere outside the confines of the 48 continental states. And I'll say it that way now that you've thrown Hawaii into the mix as a potential site for that. But, you know, right now we're doing our due diligence, and it's something that, based on all the things that you spoke about earlier in terms of the globalization of the game, that we really would not be doing our members a service if we didn't take a deep dive into this.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And one of the, it's a polarizing topic. A lot of people said it's an American, you know, it's the PGA of America, should be played in America, it shouldn't be played outside America. But there are so many PGA organizations that are the PGA of America, the professional golfers of Japan, the professional golfers of Asia, whatever the country it is, there is an organization that tries to do what the PGA of America has done for its golfers. Am I correct there?
Well, you are, and I think it goes really beyond the boundaries of golf. I mean, if you look at the National Football League, if you look at Major League Baseball, you look at the National Basketball Association, right there's a classic case of the three major professional entities in the United States, and they're all playing some type of competition internationally. I mean, the Dodgers are going to open this weekend somewhere, maybe in Asia, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the NBA has done that, and certainly the National Football League has gone to London in recent years. So it's not unprecedented, and I think that, you know, the PGA Tour has certainly globalized itself, as has the LPGA Tour. So, you know, if you look at the four major championships, particularly the three that are American-based, I mean, really the PGA Championship is the only one that's got the opportunity to do this. And so, you know, we need to take a look at it.
I like it. I like it. Can we take a break and come back and talk about something that's called Drive, Chip, and Putt? Because I've got some really cool news for Hawaii. This is going to be happening at the Masters next weekend, where all the kids around the country, they've gone through their regionals, their sub-regionals, and they're now the ones that are at the top of the list, they get to go. They've won the right to play at the Masters. But until now, Hawaii, oops, I almost gave it away. Let's take that break, come back. We're talking with PGA of America 38th President Ted Bishop. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Why wait to drive the Acura ILX? Why wait to experience design with purpose? An exterior so unique, you have to see it to believe it. Why wait to grab life by the wheel when you can do it now with paddle shifters in the Acura ILX? Why wait another 25 years to get what you want? The 2014 Acura ILX. Don't wait. Have a quarter-life crisis.
The 2014 ILX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
The Acura RDX is incredibly spacious, with over 38 inches of rear legroom and over 76 cubic feet of cargo space. With leather-trimmed seating surfaces, the RDX interior was named one of Ward's 10 Best. The 2014 Acura RDX. Create your own space in the world. Acura reminds you to properly secure items stowed in cargo area.
The 2014 RDX. Visit your local Acura dealer today.
Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded. Property guard and patrol services. Loss prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911. Or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
We have a new phone number for you to call with your questions or your comments or your suggestions. The number is 844-332-8500. Please call that number. It's 844-332-8500. With your questions, your comments, or your suggestions about your game or about the game or about what we're talking about. Let us know maybe what the funniest or most memorable moment was that happened to you on the golf course. You could be the winner of a couple of sleeves of golf balls. The number is 844-332-8500. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
We're talking with the 38th president of the PGA of America, Ted Bishop, and we're talking about, there's so much. I was looking at my list of, you know, topics, and from game golf, technology to help people figure out their club selection for the, as you said, the players, Mr. Bishop, versus the golfers who, you know, I take the club that's most comfortable. I look and I say, okay, I got about that. I know which club I'm most comfortable with. So there, as you said, there are players and there are golfers. I like how you define that.
Well, you know, just to that point, I know when I'm doing a lot of my Get Golf Ready classes with women, you know, what I try to do is I try to get them to identify their two or three favorite clubs in their bag and not get hung up with the fact that they've got 14 clubs or some other count in there. You know, find the ones you can hit the best, and those are the ones you stick with when you're learning to play the game.
I love it. I for about 2 months, I played with my driver, a 7-iron, and my putter.
that's you know what, and those are, you probably hit the ball further, yes, particularly with the driver and the 7-iron, than you do any other two clubs in your bag.
Yeah, I was amazed. I was amazed at what I could do with that, you know, and even if I had to pitch, you know, or chip something, I just gripped down on the club and took a different angle on the lie, and there she went. All righty. So on how did drive, chip, and putt come about for kids?
Well, drive, chip, and putt's a collaboration between Augusta National, the United States Golf Association, and the PGA of America. And, you know, our respective staffs put this program together over a year ago, and it's basically golf's version of punt, pass, and kick, you know, from a junior standpoint. And it's We ran all of our qualifiers and all of our competitions last year in 11 markets around the United States, and it involves boys and girls are ages 7 through 15. And we've had 88 players, 44 boys and 44 girls, that have gone through a series of local, regional, and national qualifiers to get to Augusta National next week, and actually a week from tomorrow on Sunday, before the Masters in the morning, we'll be conducting the finals of the Drive, Chip, and Putt contest at Augusta National Golf Club, which is about as exciting as it gets for any junior or parent. And the thing that really makes this competition cool, Danielle, is the fact that these kids are going to have the chance to do the driving and the chipping part of the competition on the players-only practice range.
Wow.
At Augusta National. But then greater than that, the putting finals are going to be conducted on the 18th green at Augusta National.
Wow. So. I was there for the first time last year. That practice facility is amazing.
It is.
With the bleachers and, yep, and looking at the greens that they've got set up just to practice on, it's like, wow, this is like a mini golf course.
Well, the other thing it's going to be, two other components are going to make this a great day. First of all, the Golf Channel is going to televise all the competition live Sunday morning. And secondly, Augusta National is going to open the grounds up to, I believe, about 6,000 fans.
Wow.
On Sunday. They're going to have a chance to come out and watch the kids play, and they'll have a chance to at least see, you know, part of the golf course. And it's going to be something that's going to be fun and exciting. And then I think the greatest thing is going forward, this competition has been expanded into all 50 states or all 41 PGA sections. And so there's going to be, where this year we had, I guess, right around 15,000 kids that went through the qualifiers in 2013. For this year's championship. Next year, we're anticipating we'll have over 50,000 kids nationwide that'll participate in this.
And from what I understand, there's going to be in Hawaii four local qualifiers.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Oh, that's so exciting! Did you hear that, kids? Four local qualifiers, and then is there going to be, normally when we qualify for something, we have to go to the mainland. But I understand that a sub-regional will be played in Hawaii.
Yeah, I would think that is. I, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure. I haven't looked at where the lineup of the sub-regionals would be, but I would not be surprised if that's not accurate.
And then, so instead of having to fly to the mainland for a sub-regional, then to come home and then find out that you managed to get into, you know, the regional, because you do have to eventually go to the regional, which will then get you to the Masters. So this is kind of like getting you ready to do one of the many USGA qualifiers, you know, to get to the big events or the PGA Championship. But there's no qualifiers for that.
That is. The thing that I would suggest that listeners do is, I think beginning next week when the Masters kicks off,
yes,
and probably starting on Sunday during the Drive, Chip, and Putt finals, you can go to drivechipandputt.com, I believe is the website, and you can actually go ahead and complete your online registration and get into those local qualifiers out there in your part of the country.
Fantastic. Excellent. We're really excited. Also, the Junior PGA League, that's another big initiative, getting kids playing like baseball teams play, with uniforms and having fun as a group rather than a solitary existence. Was this part of your initiative?
Well, it was, I'd like to take credit for it. I am the coach of my PGA Junior League team here at the Legends this summer. My 7-year-old grandson, Reed, is on my squad, so I'm looking forward to that. But this is, as you said, it's kind of a Little League baseball version of junior golf, and it's open to kids who are ages 7 through 13, boys and girls both. Each player gets a shirt with a number on their back, like a team jersey would be. And, you know, the way it normally works, the teams will be placed into some kind of a geographic pod, and you'll play matches against teams or golf courses that are in your area. I love the format, Danielle, because they're 9-hole matches. They play them in 3-hole segments. The format is a 2-person scramble. You can mix and match your lineups. You can change players, take people in and out of the game, so to speak, after 3 holes, put them back in for the last 3, whatever the case may be. And, you know, there is a competitive component to it, but there's also an instructional component, coaching component that takes place between each match. And I think the greatest part of the whole thing is the social component that you wind up seeing happening with the parents and everybody that that goes and follows and watches these matches. It's a combination of fun and just a little bit of competition. But again, if you're a parent or a grandparent and you're listening to the show and you're looking for a great way to get your kids started in the game and for them to meet some people, the PGA Junior League is it. You can go to any PGA affiliated course that you're with out there, and they'll be able to hook you up with a team.
PGA Junior League, that's awesome. And from what I hear, there's going to be two leagues on Oahu and one on the neighbor islands, each of our neighbor islands, and we'll know more about it later this spring. But that's exciting because this is going to grow. This is fun. This is what children enjoy, going to play games where there are other children and they get to mix and mingle and compete. It's kind of like dodgeball when I was little.
And I'll tell you what, you got so much enthusiasm and energy. I mean, you're getting me excited just doing this interview. And it's 41 degrees and raining here again today. So.
Well, I'm excited, and I thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Hey, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Ted Bishop, 38th president of the PGA of America. One final note, sir. I am amazed that you are the president of the PGA of America for 2 years. You have accomplished so much and still working as general manager of the course that you the complex that you created. Kudos to you, sir. Awesome.
Well, thanks for that, but the fact of the matter is the PGA of America job is a volunteer job. I don't get paid. I got to do something to pay my bills.
I hope we'll talk again soon.
All right, Aloha. Anytime. Thanks.
Aloha. We'll be back right after this. We're going to talk sand and golf. It's a beautiful book. George Waters has written it, and he's going to tell us about it, about how he creates or how he sees a golf course. You should see his pictures in this book. I highly recommend it. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Do you suffer from migraines and headaches, stiff neck, or grind your teeth? Come see Dr. Armand Chong at the Hawaii TMJ Institute. 20 years and state-of-the-art diagnostics with a caring staff gives you peace of mind. We're located at 3660 Wailea Avenue in Kaimuki, above Kahala. Call 737-2865 for your appointment. Validated parking. The first step to ending your chronic pain is Dr. Armand Chong at the Hawaii TMJ Institute.
Hoepu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Let's see. 40 yards to the pin, wind in my face. Where's my wedge? I saw this flop shot on TV. Oh, not even close. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
My first encounter with a modern-day architect who worked with the ground, like seeing the course lay in the land, was the late Robin Nelson. He was on the show many, many years ago. He was hired to build a golf course on the Isthmus of Maui between Kahului and Kihei. The land, of course, was underwater hundreds of thousands of years ago, so it's very sandy. And he convinced the owner of the land, who had ideas of getting earth-moving machines in there and kind of, you know, rearranging stuff. He said, you know, you have a Lynx course right here. I see it. Robin Nelson passed away in 2012, the victim of ALS. He was an exceptional person, an exceptional golf course designer. And today you'll meet another exceptional person and golf course designer. His name is George Waters. He's author of Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. Welcome to the show, George.
Thanks very much for having me, Danielle.
Absolutely. I just, you know, I was telling George that while I was talking with him the other day, that I was looking at his book, and I said, what? What did you say? Because I was lost in one of his pictures. Some of the photos in your book just take you there, and you see the sight line that you've captured, and it's perfect. I guess it's the way that you look at the ground and see the course in it. Tell us how do you see a course in the ground?
Well, I think that a big part of it is having seen a lot of natural golf courses. I've spent a lot of time in Scotland and in Ireland and in places like Bandon Dunes Resort in Oregon and on my native Long Island, and seen a lot of golf courses that were more a product of the land than a product of any particular architect's ideas about that. And so when you see the classic links courses, they're mostly, they took the ground as they found it, and they took the hazards as they found them. And what you get is a very interesting kind of golf, because there's a lot of imperfection woven into any natural sandy site, and so you find a lot of irregularities and a lot of things that get smoothed off in most modern golf course design processes remain there and create a lot of interesting situations. And so I think as you get used to seeing golf courses as a product of the land and seeing courses that were really just kind of found rather than necessarily created, it kind of gives you an eye for looking for that in other places. As far as the photography, I think I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time in some really beautiful places. And over the course of those kind of countless hours, you eventually get a few minutes of good light where you happen to be pointing the camera in the right direction.
Oh, he is so modest.
And end up with a few good shots.
You are so modest. It's Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. That's the name of the book. You can find it, of course, at Amazon. And there's a little, you know, peek, look inside. And it tells you a little bit about the book, How Terrain Shapes the Game, explores what makes golf and golf course architecture so special on sandy terrain. Now, you know, when I've always thought about how golf started, people always wonder, how did golf start? Well, to me, it was, you know how you're walking along and you always had long walks back, oh, I don't know, 600-700 years ago. You didn't have any short walks. They were long walks. And you had a stick, usually a walking stick, you know. And there's just to sort of pass the time, you just sort of hit the, you know, the stick against some rock or something. You know, you just, and then it just makes sense that a game comes out of that. If you're with a friend, maybe, you know.
Sure. And there's, you know, golf historians have a lot of theories about what the precise origin of the game was, but I think what's indisputable is that the game that we know today as golf is really a product of the sandy coastal dune landscapes in the British Isles. The fact that we play golf out of sand bunkers is one of our primary hazards. Well, sand bunkers were a naturally occurring feature in the coastal dune landscape, just bare areas of sand that were blowing around out there. And as people had access to the dunes, they sort of began to incorporate their game around these hazards. The fact that we even play the game on grass is a product of the fact that fescues and bent grasses are naturally occurring out in the coastal dune landscape. And so you learn to play a game on grass over irregular terrain that was where the wind was one of the primary hazards, because, again, that was just a natural part of the landscape. And, you know, you have very much like what we call golf today.
Yes, exactly. You were part of the restoration or work on Pinehurst 2, which is going to be the host to the U.S. Men's and Women's Open in a couple of months. What did you do? What was done to Pinehurst 2?
Well, architects Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw were brought in to restore the golf course back to what it was like when Donald Ross had originally finished it. And I feel like really, you know, for such a substantial project, what it really amounted to was kind of unearthing what was already there and peeling back layers of, you know, just kind of age that had kind of covered over Ross's original vision. The original course as a product of what they had available to them in terms of maintenance technology and design technology, was the golf corridors themselves were turfed, and then as the irrigation ran out, the turf blended out into the natural sandy hardpan landscape that you find there in the sandhills of North Carolina. And it created a very interesting kind of golf where you had these transitional areas that were sandy, that were playable, but were still kind of rough and rugged, and very much captured the spirit of what you would find on the classic links courses of Ross's home in Scotland. And so the original course was really quite a rugged place to play golf, with all sorts of nasty pits and bushes and things in the adjacent areas. The golf course that was there 10 years ago, and even just as recently as right before the restoration, was a wall-to-wall green grass carpet where the fairways had been brought in, a lot of the strategic angles had been lost, and nearly every time you missed a fairway, you ended up just in Bermuda grass rough, green Bermuda grass rough, and you hit that shot again and again, just kind of hacking out of the rough all day. But the corridors there were so huge, and so it just looked like a very wide, kind of blandish green carpet.
Mm-hmm.
But when you looked back at the old photos, you saw how much more was going on. And so they removed acres of rough grass and just carved that down to the sandy soil beneath. And then we went about the process of blending the existing bunkering, which was more or less as Ross had left it, into those sandy hardpan areas in some really interesting ways, and in ways that aren't possible outside of a sandy landscape, because we're able to take that bunker sand, which was just the natural sand, and just carve it right out into the sandy soil around it. And
wow.
So you end up with some really unique hazards. We incorporated some of the natural wiregrass plants, which are little tufts, clumps kind of grass, down into the bunkering, all around in the peripheral areas. And you end up with a really interesting golf course with a lot of strategic options and a lot of kind of unique hazard situations that that golfers don't see all the time. And I think that's going to be pretty interesting in the Open, is that, you know, for a lot of golfers, certainly really expert golfers, being in a bunker is almost preferable to being in the rough because they're so used to the consistent lie that they can expect there. And every time they end up in a bunker, they practice that shot a million times and they're out almost automatically. I mean, you marvel at it when you watch tour events every weekend and how well they just get right up and down out of every bunker. At Pinehurst number two, it's going to be a little bit of a different story because there are some places where, yeah, you'll find that great consistent bunker lie, but there's some other spots out there where you'll be hitting a shot with one foot on a wiregrass plant and the other foot hanging over the edge of a bunker. And that's a lot more in the spirit of what hazard play was like on the classic courses. Inconsistent and not something you really wanted to deal with.
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm going to ask you a question that's, of course, been rattling in the minds of many LPGA players and fans of women's golf. Should the women have gone first?
Well, perhaps in the terms of chivalry, maybe so, but...
No, from the state of the golf course, after it's finished, when the men are finished, is it in better shape now to handle 2 weeks of competitive golf than it was, let's say, when it was all grassy carpet?
Well, here's the big difference, I would say, is that they would not have been able to have those two events in such proximity to one another when they had the rough grass instead of the sandy hardpan. And the reason for that is that the rough height and the rough consistency would be one thing for a men's U.S. Open and would be another thing for a women's U.S. Open, and you wouldn't be able to make that transition in that short of an amount of time in order to accommodate both events. But when you see this Open coming up, there's only going to be two heights cut. There's going to be fairway, and then there's going to be green, and the rest is sandy hardpan. And so that enables them to have those two events on the same golf course, back-to-back. And I think it's a kind of a testament to Ross's original design that it's possible, because there's a lot of U.S. Open courses that wouldn't be able to make that transition to accommodate both events. But I think it's great that Pinehurst number two is able to do it, and that the USGA and Pinehurst are up for the challenge.
That's awesome. Awesome. It's because it's such an experiment and it's such a great idea. But the women need to have the same, you know, benefits of having a really nice golf course all prepared. You know how they do all the preparations for PGA Tour and LPGA events. I mean, they go all out to fix up those courses and make everything just absolutely perfect. There's standards that have to be met. And on a natural course, the ones that you love and design, I can see it working better. And when I saw that you were part of this, and I thought about the restoration, so to speak, of Pinehurst, I thought, wow, maybe this will work. You worked with Corin Crenshaw, and you were inspired to get into golf course architecture after reading books by Tom Doak, who was a guest on the show, Alistair McKenzie, and George Thomas. I'd like to talk a little bit about the plantation course, but we need to take a break. Will you stay with me for a few more minutes?
You bet.
Absolutely fabulous. We're talking with George Waters, golf course architect. He's also the author of Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. It's the 2013 winner of Golf Architecture Book of the Year. You really need to go check this book out and pick it up, because not only is the text interesting, but the pictures are gorgeous. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Joining us in the clubhouse this morning, it's TJ, Acura of Honolulu. Graduation!
It's graduation season, and it's a particularly a special season for me because I've got a college graduate pending this May. I'm getting ready to pony up for master's degrees. That's what I'm getting ready for.
They all want to be independent now. You know, they need to be able to travel. They need to be able to go pursue their dreams, and they'll need a car to do that. Acura of Honolulu, and you can find them at AcuraHonolulu.com. Tell us about this for graduates.
Well, I'll tell you what, Danielle, this is a really, really dynamite program. Acura has a special college graduate program, and of course, that rewards college graduates for, you know, their determination for going, for following through and getting that degree. And it rewards them in a special way, not only monetarily by giving them $500 as a special discount or applicable to their purchase or lease. All they have to do is prove to me who they are with a driver's license, social security card, and show me their diploma that they actually finished school. And we knock $500 right off the top as a gift from Acura. More importantly, they get a guaranteed approval. A lot of times what you'll find is these kids come out of college, they've been leaning on mom and dad the whole time. They don't have any of their own credit. And then when they come to their graduation time, they find out that mom and dad need to co-sign for them to qualify to get their new car because they don't have any credit experience. With Acura, we'll get you guaranteed approval all by yourself with no co-signer. As long as you don't have any negative credit, we'll get you down the road with a great below-market-based APR, a $500 discount bonus applied, and your parents won't have to get involved other than helping you make that great decision. They won't have to sign. They won't have to jeopardize that refinance that's coming up in the fall. They won't have to worry about, you know, getting their own car loan later on in the year because they've signed for you. And it lets those youngsters actually, you know, take pride in the accomplishment that they've achieved by graduating, taking full responsibility for the next step of their lives.
We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
And we're talking with George Waters. He's the author of Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. You can find it at Amazon, and you can look inside and get a description of the course. George Waters has a master's degree in landscape architecture. He's worked with Tom Doak, Corin Crenshaw, Kyle Phillips, Jim Urbina, Jeff Mingay. He's worked at Marion and St. George's in New York studying details. He's studied the relationship of golf course with coastal environment in England, Scotland, Ireland. We have a Corin Crenshaw course that is, oddly enough, kind of a lynx course, and it's not on lynx land at all. I'm thinking of the plantation course. Am I way off course here, George Waters?
No, I don't think so at all. I haven't played as much golf in Hawaii as I'd like, but my first visit, my first stop was with Kapalua and the plantation course because I'd heard so much about it. And what you find there is a kind of golf that is very much inspired by the sandy terrain golf courses that I mentioned in my book. The first thing you notice, I think, is the scale of the topography is huge. And while that's not typical of the sandy courses you find in Scotland, what is the fact that that topography is so big that you really need to factor it into every shot. The bounce and the roll of the ball after impact plays a huge part in the game at Kapalua. And that's a big part of what makes golf on sandy terrain so interesting. Another thing you notice right away is a wind. And I don't think I caught it on even an exceptional day. And it was a major part of the game was dealing with the wind from different directions. And the course is beautifully routed to kind of force you to contend with the wind coming from all angles. And it really makes, you know, a very interesting experience. And as you mentioned when we spoke the other day, when that wind changes, the whole golf course changes. And that's something that is very typical of golf courses on sandy ground, is that as those natural conditions change, it almost feels like you're playing a completely different golf course, which is something that keeps it kind of fresh and interesting over the years, is that course is never going to feel the same every single day when you're dealing with wind, firm conditions, and interesting topography.
Exactly.
And that's a lot like what golf on sandy ground is about.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the ravines that are at Kapalua become the most incredible hazards that you will not escape from.
That's very true, but fortunately they built the course wide enough that there is there's a lot of room to steer wide of them and then try to the best you can to avoid them.
Yeah, the perfect one is coming down 18, right? And that huge green that just sort of it angles down toward the ravine, and you just watch the ball going, if it's windy, wee, bye. Oh, it's such a pleasure talking with you. George Waters, golf course architect and author of Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. Now, you're off to where?
I am heading off to the Netherlands and Scotland starting in mid-April, and I will be... I'm looking at some future work with a golf course architect over there named Frank Pont, and that'll be in the Netherlands. And I'm going to be visiting a bunch of the famous sandy courses in the Netherlands, which is one of the few sandy regions of golf that I've not visited, so I'm very excited for that. I'm going to be speaking at a few clubs there about my book and about sand and golf, and then I'm going to continue that book/golf tour over to Scotland and be speaking at some clubs there, including Royal Dornoch, which is the first links course that I ever really experienced. I worked there for a summer when I was back in college. At Tom Doak's insistence, he told me, well, you need to go and learn about the classic links courses. And so that was where I ended up, and it was really a pretty inspirational summer, and so I'm looking forward to getting back there and a bunch of other courses in Scotland just to spread the word about the book and preach to the choir a little bit about how great golf on sandy ground is.
Have you been to the Sandbelt, Melbourne?
I have. I worked for my internship year with Tom Doak while I was in graduate school. My summer was, I started at a place called Yeamans Hall in South Carolina, which is all sand and fantastic design, Seth Rayner course. Then I went to Bermuda and spent 2 weeks there with Tom Doak and Jim Urbina doing some restoration work at the Mid-Ocean Club, which was pretty tough duty. And then I headed off to Australia to start work at Barnboogle Dunes, one of Tom's links courses there in Tasmania. That resort now has a Corin Crenshaw course, immediately across the river in the same dune system that we were working in. So Barnboogle Dune's a fantastic place to play golf. And during that time, I got to take a nice trip with Tom over to the Sand Belt in Melbourne, which is a clustering of, you know, 10 or so courses on pure sandy ground, many of them designed by Alistair McKenzie when he made his famous trip to Australia there. And it is a testament to the value of sandy ground for golf, because each one of those courses is really something special and all truly a product of that sandy terrain.
The book is Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. Somehow it seems like playing on sandy ground would be easier on the body, on the bones.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that I've played a few rounds in 50-mile-an-hour winds at places like Macrahanish and Bandon Dunes, where I felt awfully beat up by the time I made it back into the clubhouse. But I think that in a certain respect it is, because a lot of the courses tend to be walkable. Walking is a big part of golf on sandy ground. Most of the older courses, in particular, were designed with tees and greens right close to each other, and so. You know, and they had to be walkable because they were designed before we had golf carts. And
right,
so
right.
They looked for more gentle terrain, and they weren't looking for the most dramatic ground they could find. They were looking for the most golf-suitable ground they could find, which I think had a pretty good effect on the design.
So he's going to go work now in the Netherlands and Scotland. Work, yes. We're putting that in quotes because we don't believe that that's actually work, okay? George Waters, golf course architect, and...
Somebody's got to do it.
Yes. Yes. Sand and Golf, How Terrain Shapes the Game. So much thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's a pleasure.
Thanks very much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll be back after this. Let's have a conversation with Arnold Palmer. He was asked during the media, you know, scrum, many, many questions. And I was lucky because I was not there, but I was able to listen and then share this audio. And the question is about golf balls and about the distance the golf ball can travel now because, you know, us golfers, Ted Bishop was on earlier. There are two different kinds of players in his world. There's golfers. I'm one of them. I don't play much competitive golf because I don't have time to actually get that good. And then there are players. Players are golfers who go out and play, and they're competitive. So I'm more of a golfer, and that's why I kind of like the distance the golf ball will go. But there's a problem, and that's called the length of golf courses to keep up with the players. So Arnold Palmer, does the distance of golf balls need to be scaled back?
Well, there's no question about the fact that my opinion is that the golf ball needs to be slowed down. It's going too far, and these young people are getting stronger and stronger, and the equipment that they're building today enhances the ability to hit the golf ball far. And when you look at the yardage distance, if you study the statistics on the driving average for the pros on the tour, it's well over 300 yards. And with all of that said, we need to really get into the investigation of slowing the ball down. Now, is that happening? Well, I happen to think that it is happening. The USGA, the PGA, and the tour are all working with various experiments and things to slow the ball down. How far they've gone, I can't answer that.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Okay, but we'll see. They may have two different kinds of golf balls, which they already do. And we're going to talk about that with Titleist Hawaii rep Neil Takara, who's an excellent golfer, always had been an amateur. He was on the Governor's Cup. Neil, welcome to the show. Neil Takara, our Titleist Hawaii rep, welcome to the show. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. It's so good to have you on. Do you never chose to go pro? Why not?
You know, growing up, we always had those aspirations about, you know, playing on the PGA Tour and making a living out there. But it would get to a certain age when you realize that, you know, there's a lot better golfers out there than you. So rather than chasing the dream, have another dream of mine, which is being able to work in the golf industry in Hawaii.
And you do an excellent job. I mean, you're involved in all facets of the game. In junior golf, you work hard, of course, providing us with the best golf clubs and the greatest golf balls that Titleist can produce, where performance is precision-proven consistency. I'm looking at your website. We're talking about Golf Digest Hot List. We've been featuring the manufacturers who've made the gold list on the hot list. And, of course, Titleist drivers, woods, hybrids, putters, and irons made the hot list, and wedges. So if you didn't realize this, Titleist is the maker of the putters, Scotty Cameron, and wedges, the Vokey wedges. Okay, so when you hear about, oh, those great Vokey wedges, those are Titleist wedges. But let's start with the drivers because, you know, everybody needs a driver. and I need to ask you to explain the difference. You've got the 913 D2 and D3.
Yes, we have two head models on the driver, the D2 and the D3. Now, the 913 D2 is a slightly larger club head. It's 460cc. It's designed to be a little bit more forgiving, so you have a slightly larger sweet spot. But it's a little less, if you tend to like to shape your shots or, you know, move it around a little bit, it's a little bit difficult to do that. That club head is designed to more or less be forgiving and fly straighter. Now, on the D3 model, it's a slightly smaller head at 440cc, so your forgiveness goes down a little bit, but the workability goes up. So for maybe some of the better players that like to shape their shot, that D3 model suits them very well.
So for those of us who just wanted to go straight and get somewhere, you suggest the D3?
The D2.
The D2, right, excuse me, the D2, and for those of us who can actually draw the ball, we're going to go with the D3. I actually drew the ball, and it was the most amazing feeling. It's one of those moments where you not only, you know, you just, not only do you hear the sound and the contact, and you know you've hit the ball well, but then when you see that you've shaped the shot, you're like, wow, I did that. I should be able to do that again. And then you work for a year or two to do that. one of the hot list comments was that hot, perhaps Titleist drivers endure because they appear to have been engineered by Da Vinci and drawn by Rembrandt. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, right? Da Vinci, the engineer, and Rembrandt, the artist. But why is there a guidebook still? And that's what scares me about the adjustability factor, because there's all the lofts and all the adjustability, but I'd still need a book to tell me how to do it.
Well, the thing with drivers nowadays is that the USGA has put limits on the size of how large club heads can be made. And right now, pretty much all manufacturers are at the limit at 460cc. You know, we've had some years that we've experimented with different head shapes, not only with Titleist, but with some other manufacturers, that we've had some square-shaped drivers, some triangle-shaped drivers, again, to maximize the performance of it by keeping the size of the head at 460cc. Well, now that we're at the limit, try different head shapes. The whole thing now is an adjustability with all these manufacturers. And with Titleist, when we actually came out with the 910 model prior to the 913, you know, we've introduced what we call the Sure Fit hosel technology. It's like a Sure Fit, a tour van and a hosel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that chart that you're talking about, Daniel, it does look confusing because there are 16 different settings where you can basically adjust loft and lie independently. Again, to dial into a more precise ball size as far as what you're looking for. But if you really look at the chart and analyze it, it's not as confusing as you think. With A1 being our standard setting, you look at the horizontal and the vertical axis on that chart. And say, for example, you know, if you got a 9.5-degree driver and he says, man, you know, I'd like to hit it a little bit higher, but I like my ball flight. I don't need to draw it anymore or fade it anymore. Then you look at that chart, you look up that axis and look, you can increase the loft by about 0.75 degrees. Just run your finger across the chart where it says loft plus 0.75. You look at your lie angle and keep it at standard and just look at what that setting says. And I believe, is it so many settings, even I still refer to the chart. But,
right.
I can't memorize all 16 settings.
No, of course not. But the bottom line is, it's workable. One of the things with the hot list panel isn't a group of editors. They end up looking over what all the different hot list experimenters came up with. And some of the beauty that, you know, they talk about the low handicappers said that the 913 and D3 was explosive yet soft, a perfect combination of sound and feel. The medium handicapper said you hear the golf ball at impact and not the club. It's classic. So I guess what I should suggest is if any of this gets confusing, go to a demo day. And don't you have one coming up really soon?
I sure do. In fact, I have one this morning at the Mililani Golf Course starting at 10 a.m.
Mililani, 10 a.m. So you can go and check out all of the new Titleists, the drivers, the woods, the hybrids, the irons, and the wedges. Are you going to take Vokey wedges out there?
Yes, I will have the new Vokey SM5 wedges that just started hitting the stores and the golf shops about a couple of weeks ago. So I'll have all that new stuff out there for people to come down and try.
That's excellent. Fantastic. You know, and one of the things about the wedges is on the website, you folks have made the Vokey Design spin mill features. You explain everything about them, but you also talk about understanding wedges, the bounce. And what people think, you know, when you hear the word bounce in golf, it's not bounce like a ball. It's bounce. Explain bounce. It's like the thickness of the wedge as it comes down onto the under the ball, onto the ground.
Well, actually, bounce, how we measure bounce is looking at the golf club from, you measure it from the leading edge to the trailing edge of the sole of the golf club. Mm-hmm. And the way Vokey measures bounce, I mean, it may differ from manufacturer to manufacturer, but what we put as far as our bounces on the wedges is the effective bounce, or how it's going to play. It's not necessarily a measured bounce. When we talk about effective bounce, it's how that club will play at that particular impact, because we have so many different grinds available on our wedges. If you just measure, like, just take a standard measurement and say, okay, this is 10 degrees of bounce, that's one thing. But if you actually see how the club is going to play at impact, that's what we call effective bounce. That's what we put on our wedges as far as how we determine the bounces on our Vokey.
That's excellent. 21 loft bounce options from 46 to 62 degrees, 6 sole grinds, 3 finishes, tour chrome, gold nickel, raw black. I like the gold nickel.
You know, it's one of our more popular finishes. You know, that's a new finish on the SM5 models. And through the first couple of weeks, what I've been hearing out there is that the gold nickel finishes have been doing really, really well.
Yeah, there's something nice about a shiny. And the low handicapper said it's very responsive on greenside shots. Spin is remarkable. Medium handicapper said in the sand, the ball comes off so clean. I could throw the ball up anywhere, short or long. I can feel the wider sole. And that's really exciting. I mean, everybody, you know, really likes plays or respects the Vokey wedges, and that's awesome. Now, on your woods, and most people who aren't really good at the game have a hard time with the woods. And while I do a station ID, just you're going to be talking a little bit about what the woods that made the gold list were the 913F and the 913F.D. And therein Danielle gets, you know, crazy confused. Hold on, just give me up in just a second. KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo. Now, what's the difference between the 913F and the 913F.D?
Okay, the main difference between the two models in our fairways, the 913F is actually a slightly smaller head than the FD. It's a little bit shallower face, so it produces a slightly higher ball flight. It's a little bit easier for golfers to get the ball airborne.
That's important.
913FD is a slightly larger head model with a deeper face, and what that does is it actually reduces the spin a little bit, and it also is able to produce a slightly lower trajectory than the 913F.
Okay, this is cute because the medium Handicapper says, this is the ninja of the fairway woods, quiet and deadly effective. This is up at Mililani at 10 o'clock this morning. There is a demo day. I think there's one next weekend, too. You're going to be busy, aren't you? Are you going?
I have the demo day today at Mililani from 10 to 2 p.m., and then we'll be out at Paulina next week. I want to say it's 9 to 1. I may need to call Paulina to confirm the time, but I will also be out there at Paulina. Now, the thing with the Paulina demo day is it's a little bit different. It's, we're going to be calling it a product showcase where we'll have not only our metal woods, our irons, and our wedges, but we'll also have the new Cameron putters out there as well.
Oh, so you'll have the putters next weekend. Oh, that's exciting. So you make your plans because you're going to check out the Scotty Cameron Futura X or the Scotty Cameron Select. Now, tell me how you pronounce that. Is that Golo 5?
Yes, Golo.
Okay. Golo 5. And these are both hot list winners. Beautiful. One of the comments about the Scotty Cameron Select Golo 5 is form meets function, the hallmark of a Cameron putter. Wow. Is there any thought in the future of doing adjustability to putters?
Adjustability, I mean, there may be something along those lines, you know, when it comes to putters. Right now, you know, I know there was a thing was last year where Scotty Cameron had developed what he calls a knuckle hosel that he was experimenting with some of the tour players, learned some adjustabilities on being able to adjust the length of the hosel and different kinds of offset. But they're still experimenting, and whether or not it's something that, you know, they bring out to market is yet to be seen. But I think we're a little bit of a ways away from that in terms of putters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're seeing all that in the metalwoods right now. But with putters, we may be a little bit ways away, but it wouldn't surprise me if somewhere down the line, you know, we do have something like that available.
The Futura X has an interesting look to it with the red eyes.
Yeah, it looks like eyes are actually weights on top of that.
Ah, that's what they are. So tell us about the weights.
Well, the Futura X putter, the whole design concept behind that was, I got a story for you, where last year, you know, Adam Scott, you know, he uses the long putter, and he wanted something that had a little bit more of a stable feel. So he went to Scotty Cameron and asked him to design a putter for him that feels very stable. Scotty Cameron had come out with this particular design, which is called the Futura X, and it has very high MOI, a moment of inertia, so there's less resistance in twisting in terms of misses off the tour, off the heel. He was able to produce something just before the Masters, and Adam Scott had put that putter in play just in time for the Masters, and lo and behold,
wow,
he putted beautifully, and he won the Masters.
Wow, that is wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the putter that was in design, so to speak, production, and now it's available to anyone?
Yes, it is. Now, keep in mind, the putters are only available in conventional length. We also have a dual balance model, which is about 38 inches. You know, with the whole anchoring rule that's taking place right now, or that's being talked about, you know, there's not going to be any more opportunities for mid-length putters or long putters. We do have the Futura X available in a dual balance model, which is designed to combat that anchoring band.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to produce a similar feel where you have a more stable butt in of the club that gives you the same similar feeling like you had if you were putting with a mid-length or a long putter.
Do you think they'll, now this is, I'm taking your Titleist hat off, this is just Neil, do you think the long putters will still be sold after the ban goes into effect in 2016?
I think they will still be sold. There'll probably still be some shops that may have them. Now, whether or not their companies are going to continue to manufacture them, I could probably tell you that they won't be manufacturing anymore. Now, there will be golfers out there that will continue to look for them, because although the anchoring ban, you know, does take effect for, obviously, the PGA Tour and the worldwide tours, as well as tournament golf here, you know, your recreational weekend golfer may still want to play with that and say, the heck with the rules, you know, I'm going to play with something that I'm comfortable with, and I'm not going to be, you know, playing for any money, so I'm going to use the putter that I'm comfortable with. So I can still see that happening.
Right. Well, I sure hope that, you know, if you've got yours and you like yours, that you keep yours. And something tells me that, you know, there will be long putters available, because that's just, there are people who want to play. They're recreational players, and the rules of the game, I was talking to Ted Bishop at the beginning of the show, and his definition is there are golfers and there are players. And the players are the rule followers. They're competitive. They want to do it exactly by the book. The golfers are the people who are recreational players. They don't really care that much about the game, the rules of the game. They just want to go play the game, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. So the PGA of America was against the idea of having a ban. So I just think there'll always be a market for them. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe the main manufacturers didn't make them anymore. But certainly there will be a place, you know, where the smaller manufacturers or a specialty company that says this is not, you know, you can't use this in competition. Somebody's insisting on calling right now, and I'll get to them in just a second. Neil Takara, thank you so much for being on the show. Today, a demo day at 10 o'clock this morning at Mililani Golf Course, and you can see all of the Titleist drivers, the irons that we didn't talk too much about. The irons are got a high rating, goldless too, the Titleist API 714, and you've got those there too, right?
Yes, I'll have all the irons, the AP1, AP2, the CB, and the MB models available as well.
Fabulous. And the putters will be over the following demo day. So there's one at Mililani today at 10. The next one is over in Ko'olina, and that will be coming up next week. So
yes.
Give Ko'olina a call and find out exactly what demo day Titleist is going to be. You know, I think they're having two, one, Saturday and Sunday. And I just escapes my mind right now. Thank you so much for being on the show, Neil.
Thanks for having me, Danielle.
Absolutely. We'll be back right after this. We're going to be talking with Bob Bupka. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
It was our office manager's birthday, and she loves golf. So we decided to get together for golf at Poipu Bay, and we invited a bunch of our customers. It turned into a party. The clubhouse restaurant made a fabulous lunch. The customers had a great time and met the people they give orders to. They were golf buddies long before the 19th hole. Golf at Poipu Bay. Family, friends, business, and fun at Poipu Bay Golf Course on Kauai's South Shore. Spectacular. Call 742-8711 and book your tee time, get together, or event at Poipu Bay. That's 742-8711. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem.
Do you suffer from migraines and headaches, stiff neck, or grind your teeth? Come see Dr. Armand Chong at the Hawaii TMJ Institute. 20 years and state-of-the-art diagnostics with a caring staff gives you peace of mind. We're located at 3660 Wailai Avenue in Kaimuki, above Kahala. Call 737-2865 for your appointment. Validated parking. The first step to ending your chronic pain is Dr. Armand Chong at the Hawaii TMJ Institute.
We have a new phone number for you to call with your questions or your comments or your suggestions. The number is 844-332-8500. Please call that number. It's 844-332-8500. With your questions, your comments, or your suggestions about your game or about the game or about what we're talking about, let us know maybe what the funniest or most memorable moment was that happened to you on the golf course. You could be the winner of a couple of sleeves of golf balls. The number is 844-332-8500. Looking forward to hearing from you.
You scope out the sand traps. You size up the green. You're eyeing the flag. Now, it's time to choose a club, but you don't know which one to choose? That's when you turn to Danielle Tucker. Now, back to the golf club.
And it is time to win golf balls, okay? All you have to do is be the ninth caller at 808-296-5467. Ninth caller wins Bridgestone E6s. Bridgestone Golf E6s, a box. That's four sleeves, okay? Coming your way. All you have to do is be the ninth caller at 808-296-5467. And if you call in on our toll-free number at 844-332-8500, you will also win. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, oh, I don't know, something that's inspiring you about the game of golf. What is making you excited? Spring? We've got thunderstorms possible today, so just keep an eye on the sky, okay? And if they tell you to come in, it's for a reason. We're talking now with my friend Bob Bupka, voice of golf, co-host of the Grill Room Radio Show. It's the Grill Room Golf Radio Show on TuneIn Radio, and you can hear it anytime. It's on Monday, but of course on TuneIn, it's available to you at your convenience, on your iPad, on your cell phone, on your whatever phone you have, online. If you're at home doing work on your desktop, you can always have it playing in the background. He is the author of The Ryder Cup, Golf's Greatest Event, and welcome into the clubhouse, Bob.
Well, always good to hear your voice, Danielle, and kind of a tough act to follow here after you had the president of the PGA of America and Neil from Titleist. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, silly. You know, I want to talk to you about something that I didn't even think about it until I was thinking about Jason Day. You know, the Masters is coming. I was 12 days away, right?
Yeah.
Jason Day has a left thumb injury. And then I thought, Anthony Kim. Where's Anthony Kim? He had a left thumb injury. And a friend of mine, who is a doctor in town, just had a left thumb operated on. He said he just got back into the game, and he could imagine having a painful right thumb, but the left, that's debilitating. Did Anthony, tell me your thoughts on this.
Well, I was just going to say that two occupations you don't want to be with a bad left thumb is a professional golfer and a hitchhiker.
Yes, but Anthony's disappeared, hasn't he?
Yeah, he really is. Sometimes these injuries, and you know, just about everybody that tees it up in a professional golf event has a little bit of a ache or a pain or a nagging injury here or there. But there are certain areas, certainly with your hands or your wrist, I mean, it can really knock you out of the game. And the ultimate one is the bad back. We're watching that with Tiger now. Mm-hmm. There's no degree of certainty that he's even going to be teeing it up in this 2014 Masters. So that's how bad a back can be. And the only golfer that I can think that has relatively handled a bad back well over the years, Danielle, is Fred Couples.
You're right. And he, I mean, look at, he's on the Champions Tour, but he did a lot of specialty in research, almost unapproved in the United States, ways of dealing with his back, of making it to the point where he could be competitive. And it's interesting to see what, you know, first of all, we don't know what's wrong with Tiger's back. We don't know whether it's a bulging disc. We don't know whether it's a herniated disc. We don't know if it's stress fractures in his back. But we've been talking about his back since he started playing the game because of the force with which he twisted himself. What have you heard?
Well, I told him early on when he first started telling me about his bad back. I said, Tiger, it's very simple. Your wallet's too heavy. I mean, so, but no, he really, you're so accurate when you brought up the amount of talk that Tiger does. He has a clubhead speed in excess of 120 miles an hour. You beat enough golf balls, and he certainly has beat tens of thousands of golf balls. And at some point, it just begins to give. The human body really wasn't designed to swing a golf club. It just goes against everything that is absolutely natural. Mm-hmm. Now, can he recover from this? Certainly. The thing is that, you know, normal people, if they have a back injury, it's probably because they're not in the shape that they should be in. Whereas when you have Tiger Woods having a bad back, when he's in better shape than 99% of the population, it's a very serious thing.
You know, the thing about Tiger Woods being in better shape than us, he works out like a fiend. He's an athlete, but there is a point where you ask an athlete who is accustomed to doing something at 100% and giving it everything and doing it every day, because it becomes an obsession. And if you tell them to dial it back, do it a little less stressful, do some stretching exercises, how about a little yoga, Mr. Woods? You know, I mean, that doesn't feel like you're accomplishing anything. You don't feel like you're really doing anything good. It's a complete relearning of what to do about your body.
Well, no, you're right about that. And actually, you're speaking to a relative expert. I've been called an amazing bodybuilder over the last few years because my body's getting bigger and bigger, so I'm a pretty good bodybuilder.
Okay, Bob. I want you to get up out of that chair and start moving those legs and walking. We don't want you building your body the way you're bodybuilding. I don't like. I want you to be around for a long, long, long time. So
I didn't know what end to start at, so I started in the middle.
Now, how about Phil Mickelson? I mean, I were watching him play at the Texas Valero Open, right? And he's about to miss the cut. So what does he do? He goes into the creek. Yeah, he goes into the creek. Now, you know, with legs, rolls up his pants, makes the cut. On the number.
Yeah, I mean, truly amazing stuff. I mean, Phil really is playing at Valero because he wants to get some reps in. He doesn't think he's as sharp as he would like to be when he makes that drive down Magnolia Lane. And certainly if you miss the cut, you're cutting your reps basically in half. So Phil's going to play again this coming week. At Houston, the Shell Houston Open, that golf course has really been tweaked to make it very similar to the conditions that they're going to get at Augusta National. There's no duplicating Augusta National on any golf course, but the roll-off areas around the greens and whatnot, Steve Timms, the executive director of the Shell Houston Open, and the guys there, Bart Darden, the media director, and of course the Therese Jones designed golf course. So it's a good test, and you know, we're going to see how Phil progresses. He wants to peak. You know, he'd love to win Shell, there's no doubt about it. But his important thing, and with Phil, he doesn't, if given his choice, could he peak going down Magnolia Lane, or could he peak when he pulls into Pinehurst? He'd take Pinehurst in a heartbeat.
Okay, yes.
Because, as you know, and your listeners might not know, he needs a U.S. Open to complete a career Grand Slam. He's won the other three events. Fourth and final one has been his bugaboo. Matter of fact, he's finished second six times. I mean, that is just absolutely incredible that somebody could finish six times in one event. So he wants to win a U.S. Open. He certainly would take another green jacket, that's for sure.
Is he playing the Valero Open? Is he playing the Shell? Or is he just practicing for the Masters?
Well, he's doing a little bit of both. I mean, every time you tee it up, you have to have in your mind that you're looking to win. Otherwise, I mean, you just can't turn on you know, I want to win this week, or this week I don't want to win, this week I want to win. You know, that's a very dangerous game to play. So certainly Phil entered Valero with the hopes of winning. I mean, he would love it if he had won Valero and he'd won a Shell Houston Open. He would be riding a tremendous amount of confidence into Augusta. But if he doesn't win, it's a combination. There's no doubt in my mind that there are certain shots outside,
you know, that certain amount of shots that Phil's going to hit this week and next week, where in the back of his mind, he's going to say, well, I'll need this shot on 11 at Augusta. I'll need this shot on 14 or 13 or whatever hole. So he's trying to do double duty.
Yes, and I can see where that would get you in trouble. But I imagine that, you know, golfers are superstitious. And would I want to win an event and then try to go back-to-back, which is, you know, statistically very difficult to accomplish. But if you just go out and play your best golf, and if you happen to win, you know, you're just always playing your best golf. I think, but that is that not competitive enough in the mindset of the professional golfer?
Well, you know, I think it is. I mean, everybody's different, and nobody can climb into the head of anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, getting back to that scenario, if Tiger, you know, I thought possibly if Tiger's back was better that he would commit to Shell Houston Open to get in a competitive nature. He did not. So one of two things tells me that his back is not better, or he thinks he's going to be better served by going down to maybe Augusta early and playing some practice rounds down there. But, you know, Tiger, his whole, you know, mental attitude, Danielle, for his entire career, he constantly told us that if he showed up at an event, he was showing up to win. Now, will he carry that attitude if he does get to tee it up in the Masters? Where he's never won the Masters without winning, you know, in the year of the Masters.
Right,
and,
right.
And this year he hasn't won. So, you know, just look at it. A year ago, he had won five times. Now this year he hasn't won. And, mm-hmm. and you know, his back has been bothering him.
For a long time.
Maybe that's what it'll take, though. You know, if in 2005... you had me on your show, and you said to me, how long will it be before Tiger wins another Masters?
Yeah.
I would have said, well, about maybe 06 and 07 and 08,
right.
You know, four
I
in a row.
I think you did, too.
I probably did, but you're not supposed to say that.
Now, what did you catch any of the Eurasia Cup, the first Eurasia Cup?
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Miguel Jimenez.
Uh-huh.
I you know, watching him perform in Ryder Cups, and he's the only golfer I know that if you had your choice of watching him play 18 holes or watch him warm up on the driving range, I'd gladly go to the driving range with his unique warm-up stretching and everything that he does. I mean, you know, I can close my eyes and see Miguel with a cigar in his hand and a glass of wine in the other hand and a smile on his face. He's somebody that truly, truly loves the game of golf, loves playing the game of golf, loves being around the people that are connected with the game of golf, and truly, you know, he's going to be teeing it up on the Champions Tour. And
he's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to set a record because his girlfriend now is 25. I don't know if anybody on the Champions Tour ever bought a 25-year-old girlfriend to an event, so we'll have to wait and see.
Well, they were all square going into the final hole. There were 9.5 to 9.5, right? And Tanihara and Fernandez Castaño have the hole, so they had to finish 10-10, having to share the cup, you know? And it was just, I thought to myself, wow, the Ryder Cup's coming up in just, gee, I don't know, a few months. And that was the European, you know, top of the European tour. So, I don't know. It'll just be interesting to see what happens. And we've run out of time. But you're going to be on the show again with me coming up from Augusta.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, it's where the golf season starts. And I'll be on the show with you from the British Open. I'll be on the show with you from Pinehurst.
Absolutely fabulous. I'm looking forward to a full season of fabulous golf with Bob Bupka. Thank you so much for being on the show. Absolutely. Thank you to the people who make this show possible. You can march into the savings of the year at Acura of Honolulu. It's the final weekend. We can guarantee rates as low as 0.9% APR on almost any Acura in stock. There are special leases as well. So you get on down to Acura of Honolulu at 777 Ala Moana. And remember, graduates, you don't need to have your parents co-sign. If you show your proof of ID and that you've graduated college and you're ready to rock and roll and get yourself a job and you need some wheels. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, visually stunning. Nature and Robert Trent Jones Jr. put together a beautiful venue for golfers of all abilities. It's unique, unforgettable. Get to Poipu Bay Golf Course and Star Protection for property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home, for your business. Get them on your property, and they'll tell you how to protect it. Thank you for your mana, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2014.